People often say, when I was in Amarati, they would say, like, Amarati is more like an institution.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What the perspective they, how do they look at it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at it through suspicion and negativity. I mean, it does have, I mean, sometimes, I mean, fortunately, I'm at Amaravati, but one of the conditions that I set was no business meetings. So I'm kind of, I'm in a unique position. So, I mean, part of it is the size of it. Once you get to a certain size, then you actually have to institute structures that help things to function. Otherwise, it just descends into kind of chaos or anarchy, or it's not helpful, or people fall by the wayside, really. So it does need structure. And so that's what an institution is something that has a lot of structure. And to a certain degree, out of necessity, of the sheer numbers of people. I mean, at this Vasa, there's 25 monks, 2 novices, 2 Anagarikas. This must be about a dozen Siladhara and 3 or 4 Anagarikas. Plus you got 10 long-term lay, men, lay women. Plus you've got the short-term lay visitors. So, you know, it's a big group. It's about 60 people, I would think, on a regular basis living in the monastery. And I mean, there's always benefits and drawbacks to anything. So that, I mean, the drawbacks are is that once you've got that many people, it gets a bit more complex. Necessarily. And the benefit is that, gosh, I mean, the blessings that it brings to so many people is really, and plus it is still preserving a high standard of training for monastics and the opportunity for lay people to plug in and gain the access to teachings. It's like the, because there's, I mean, how long is the Saturday meditation workshops been going on?
My understanding, I mean, Ajahn Kuniko, you might know, but probably right back to near the beginning is what I've heard.
Yeah. Well, I've been a Amarati monk for many years. So I'm not sure.
But in the,
yeah,
but I've
it's
heard
still.
It.
It's been, yeah, that's been going on a long time. So that, they're so, you know, close to 40 years. And just the fact that people know that they can, and a lot of people. Somebody was saying there's probably more people come to that Saturday workshop than they do to the lunar observance talks, especially on, like, even Lumpa Sumedho's, which is on the lunar observance days. And so it's a, you know, it's amazing. And then during the Vasa, every Sunday, there's a Dhamma talk given with the themes people can. So people have, you know, and that's beside the regular schedule of things. So it's an incredible gift to the world. So a tremendous benefit. But, you know, it does come with a certain complication of people. And it's like, I mean, certainly in Christian monasticism, Saint Benedict, who started the first monastic order, set up the first kind of, say, Christian vinaya, his ideal size of community was the number of monks that you could get around a fireplace and keep warm. You know, so you're not more than 15 kind of max. So, you know, so it's, and of course, I mean, there's huge Benedictine monasteries around the world now, but in terms of, you know, monasticism, so that it becomes, you know, necessarily, I think it's, if you do it with a lot of attention, and see a place like Amaravati is still drawing people who want to come and train, because there's training still being given, training accessible, you know. And I think it's also balanced by having smaller monasteries that people can come to jitters and know, you've got, it's a lot quieter, it's a lot, so you a different pace of life, different amount of contact. So that it's helpful for as a balance, but it's also alternating in the same way that, say, like at, when I was the abbot of Wat Nanachan, Wat Nanachan's always been a large, fairly busy monastery. But, I mean, I set up a couple really secluded monasteries for retreat. There are Bujamkong and Taodam. And then plus we had all of the branch monasteries of Wakrapong that we could send monks to and just alternate back and forth. I think it's helpful to have you've got both those options and to be careful about things, because sometimes the institutions of like a religion, I mean, it's kind of like what comes to mind is Ajahn Siripanyo's reply to his, or response to his father when, this is when he was just, he'd been an Anagarika or Pakao, he'd been a novice, he was determined he was going to take his bhikkhu ordination. His father, very upset, and he's kind of a wealthy businessman, very successful. He's like, I can't believe a son of mine is going to commit himself to an organized religion. And Ajahn Siripanyo was, oh, Dad, you don't have to worry. The Buddhism in Thailand is not organized. So to a certain degree, there is this. There's a fluidity there that needs to be kept. So if things get too rigid, then it gets problematic. And that's a tendency in religion and even in Buddhism, where you're just fearful about change, fearful about making sure all the rules are kept absolutely, and you forget that it's actually for freeing your heart. So the institution can take over as opposed to the spirit of it. So it's important to reflect on it.